Tesla is getting into the fast lane again with its Model 3, its sedan for the masses, beating Wall Street expectations on deliveries in the second quarter. Investors were relieved about the surprisingly good news, and shares of the electric car maker jumped about 8% in after-hours trading. Tesla delivered way over 77,000 Model 3s. Wall Street was expecting just over 73,000 deliveries.
Samsung Electronics has warned its earnings are likely to plunge. The consumer electronics giant says second quarter operating profit will probably be down by over a half. That warning came in an official filing weeks ahead of its official results. A storm of negatives is battering the South Korean firm. Tariffs have risen on the memory chips that are a big part of Samsung's business.
U.S. President Donald Trump's efforts to get a contentious citizenship question on the 2020 census got reinforcement Sunday from a top immigration official. Ken Cuccinelli, the new acting director of U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, told Fox News Sunday, "I think the president has expressed determination." He's noted that the Supreme Court didn't say, "This can't be asked." They said they didn't appreciate the process by which it came forward the first time. So the president is determined to fix that and to have it roll forward in the 2020 census.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Monday. It's July the 8th, and it's 5:09 in the morning. Thank you for tuning in for another edition of The Opening Bell. Another business day, another business week getting underway. Back at it after a long holiday weekend. Hopefully you had a safe and relaxful holiday, 4th of July holiday weekend. Lots going on around the world as we get busy back at it on this Monday. We'll have some of the numbers from Wall Street, the futures market momentarily. There's some news this morning about Deutsche Bank cutting staff, and also whether or not we might see a Federal Reserve rate cut later this month. All of that in focus this morning as we begin on the program today. Marcia Sirlin is here in our CEO Spotlight. Marcia is the founder and CEO of United Scrap Metal, based here in the Chicago area. She's in her PPG Paints green room, and we'll bring in Marcia momentarily for our first segment this morning. A little bit later in the program, at about 5:38, Neil Irwin will be here. You know Neil from the New York Times, where he's a financial writer, also the author of How to Win in a Winner-Take-All World, the definitive guide to adapting and succeeding in high performance. We will talk with Neil again at about 5:38 this morning. Let's begin first on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk as we look at a futures market that pointing toward a negative open on Wall Street later this morning. Dow futures are off nearly 60 points, a quarter of a percent. S&P futures are off nearly a quarter of a percent as well. NASDAQ futures down nearly 28 points, off nearly a third. Around the globe this morning, markets generally in the red in Europe, in London, and Germany and France. And in Asia this morning, as we check the markets there, lots of red, too, on the screen with the Nikkei going to end the day down about 158 points, nearly a percent this morning. Check that, nearly 200 points this morning, but still nearly a percent. In Hong Kong, off nearly a percent and a half, down 443 points, and in China, off nearly 2.5%. And oil in the United States is at $57.50 a barrel, down about a penny this morning. Again, one of the big stories we'll monitor for you this morning, Deutsche Bank has begun cutting 18,000 jobs as part of a major restructuring plan. It's what's being called one of the biggest overhauls in an investment bank to an investment bank since the worldwide financial crisis in 2008. The bank will get rid of its global equities business. It'll also cut some of the fixed income operations. Most of the job cuts will be in Europe and in the United States, with layoffs also reported across Asia and Australia. All of the cuts are to be made by 2022. Consumer credit for May comes out today. Analysts are expecting an increase of $15.9 billion after a $17.5 billion gain in May. It's one of the lead reports today that we expect to drive the markets, at least partially, as we move forward this morning. Let's begin front and center this morning with our CEO Spotlight. In the Spotlight this morning, Marcia Sirlin, the founder and CEO of United Scrap Metal. Marcia, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell.
Thank you.
It's nice to have you in this morning. I oftentimes hear that you're a 40-year-old startup every day, sort of. We want to talk a little bit about the business and about you during the interview today, but talk to us a little bit about your business and the 40 years.
Well, it just seems like it just started. And that's why I think I am a startup, mm-hmm. because I get excited every day that I come into the office. It's like there's a passion that you have to have. Whatever you do, you have to love it. And I'm no longer driving trucks. I'm not driving any forklifts, and I'm not driving any cranes. But I love the sounds and talking to customers, talking to people who are our team members. Mm-hmm. It's a very exciting business.
But you used to do all that stuff, and with a hard hat on, I might add, right?
Always, yeah. Always. You've got to be safe. One of our principles are that if you have to be safe in any plant or in our facilities. And we now have 6 facilities all over the country, and we're growing.
Talk to us about the beginnings of United Scrap Metal. 1978 was the year, and it's sort of a Cinderella-type story, isn't it?
Oh, it is. I can pinch myself all the time that I've gotten here, and it's so exciting. In those early years, people always ask me, why scrap metal? And I go, well, why not? I really had no money, and it was the only way I could survive. I had 2 children, young kids, and the only way I could pay some of the bills was by picking up the scrap metal in the alleys. And I had my first truck was a budget rent-a-truck. I had $200, and that's how I started the business.
And so fast forward to 2019, you're celebrating 40 years in the business. Talk to us about the ups and the downs, the challenges, and the big wins.
Those are a lot. I could probably talk for a half hour on each subject. The ups, of course, are the journey. The journey in any business is just, you have to know where there's an opportunity. And I always am pretty much of an optimist. And so everything is an opportunity. And I look at metal as a very important part of our business. We now ship by rail. We ship by ship, barges, and by truck. We have over 100 trucks in our facilities, and we have about 500 people that work for us. But to get there, that was the tough part. But I never looked back. I needed the money. I had to do the right things for the customers, and they absolutely never saw a woman do this kind of business. So when I walked in, at least people would listen to me because they were so surprised a woman would be doing this kind of work. And I don't know about the highs of this. The highs are probably every day because there's always something exciting. We get a new customer, or we just do something that makes me proud. Every month we change our focus from philanthropic work. We support. Last month it was the veterans. This month it's going to be autistic children. Every month we support a charity, so we do a lot of that too.
You mentioned in the early days it was going up and down the alleys finding scrap metal. The business has changed because you get scrap metal from a variety of different places now. Talk to us about who the customers are nowadays.
The customers are generally manufacturers, large industrials, small industrials. We have customers all over the country. We provide them with containers and trucks, and our facilities are open 24/7. Even during holidays, we're open. We have just spectacular service. There's nothing that you can't count on for our company. And we like to take opportunities. Like right now, it's really a down market for steel. There's been kind of a lull in that market. It's been dropping dramatically, and those are times that we consider opportunities. I don't look at them as failures, or mm-hmm. even though we collect a lot of the material, we think there's an opportunity, and we look for we look for more business at those times.
So what? Give us a sense of what some of the scrap is that's coming in. Is it just leftover pieces of big pieces of metal from construction, or is it old cars, or is it old tool? What are we talking about?
A variety. Our scrap metal is really a variety. It comes from all different kinds of materials and different companies. It can be, it can come from Weber Grill. It can come from when they make a new grill. Will we get any of the parts that, number one, might get dented, or something that might not be perfect? It comes to us. And when they make a when they fabricate anything, whatever the leftover materials are, that's what we receive. So, or somebody who makes, you can relate to like a fork. In between the tines, there's metal, and we get the in-between stuff. So it's from every type. It's demolition. It's from construction. And whatever's happening in the cities, we'll get a piece of it.
When you see the piles of stuff coming in, are you able to determine where it comes from? Are there stories that you maybe follow or used to follow about where the product is coming from, and why would you pay attention to some of that stuff?
Well, sometimes if it's anything historic, well, we pull it out and we try to find out where it belongs. And I know in my earlier days, we had a piece of bronze that was it was sort of a circle. And one of my one of our team members was going to cut it, and I went, no, can't cut it, because I think this belongs somewhere. And it took me a year to figure out and talk to the Chicago Park District and all kinds of places. Nobody knew where this belonged, and finally, it was a statue in Independence on Independence that where it belonged, and the alderman made a big, he had a day for me and gave me a plaque because we returned it. So mine was not in bronze, his was.
I was reading up on you for our interview today, and I thought one of the cool stories is how being in scrap metal business, you're able to sort of have a pulse on how the economy is doing, the national economy is doing. How could that be?
Well, we're one step above the garbage group. The waste management type companies. And I think that if you look in the boxes and what we receive, if the boxes, they're really a barometer on how good the company is. Now, of course, there are some companies that are great all the time. Mm-hmm. But some, when you see a majority of the customers having excess inventory that they're tossing, they're cleaning out the offices, it has different kinds of scrap. That will tell me that they don't have many orders. And when they don't have many orders, that means the economy isn't doing well. Mm-hmm. And if it happens broadly, then you can almost predict what's going to happen soon. Because remember, we are manufacturers. We also manufacture in our company. Mm-hmm. We make products out of wire. We liberate metal from plastic, like if you look at your house wire. We have equipment that does that we're the largest one in North America, and we produce a huge amount of material, and that that equipment runs 24/7 every week.
So what does the scrap tell you now about what's happening in the economy?
I haven't gotten a pulse yet. I'm a little, you know, it's funny. The auto sales are down. Construction was down in the, and manufacturing was slightly, they're all slight. They've been doing well since the first of the year. I sort of thought that we were going to go into some kind of a downturn at the beginning of the year. However, it really hasn't happened. Mm. Our business is still very, very strong. But I cautiously look at all the numbers and look at the boxes. We haven't seen that, but summer is always sort of a maintenance time. Like a lot of the steel mills right now are shut down for either their furnaces, or they've blown a furnace, or they have just done some heavy-duty maintenance. But remember, when things are really cooking here in the U.S., they don't shut down for anything. Mm-hmm. But summer is a time, so I'm cautiously optimistic.
Maybe in the fall you'll be able to get a better read after summer vacations are over.
I think so, and that's one of the the objectives that we have. We think that there will be interest rates drop. The Fed's September meeting.
We've heard a lot from the Trump administration about steel. We've had the tariffs in place. That's been a big deal. How has that impacted your business?
Well, it's very interesting. In the beginning, last year, it was markets really rose a great deal from his announcement, which meant the, you know, domestically we were going to do very well. At this point, there isn't much happening because of it. But the fact that the G20, he's got this that he's working with the Chinese right now, it looks like he's not going to add additional tariffs, and they've made a deal. He's not going to put any more in, and they're going to be buying our ag, and so John Deere will do better. Mm-hmm. So that's a good thing. So I think that he's not doing tariffs will bode very well for our country.
I mentioned earlier that some of the photographs that I saw in doing research of you, a lot of you in hard hats. You walk the property, you meet with the line workers, and as the 40th anniversary of your company came around, you did something really unique that I want you to talk about. Talk to us about not only being around for 40 years, but why you involved all of the employees individually in it.
I think around our 39th year, and I sat around our executive team and we said, what would be appropriate for a 40th anniversary? And I said, I don't want a party. I don't want to celebrate it. I want to celebrate it with our team members. And I will come up with some idea. And then I came up with the idea of meeting with each and every team member throughout the country, wherever we had a location, and talking to them. Because I think it's important for team members to know that this is not a big sort of, no-name corporation that has a limited amount of connection with their team members. So I made a schedule, and I wrote a book. And I wrote it in a children's book with illustrations about how I started with a budget rent-a-truck and $200 and how I went through the alleys to pick up metal and how United Scrap Metal started. And I went and talked to each one. And I also, at each location, I had them, prior to me coming, fill out a form about their children, their names, their what they want to do and what their dreams are. I mean, we had astronauts. A lot of ranchers, by the way, that wanted to be farmers. So I was thrilled because we need more farmers in this country. And so on my journey, I walked into each location and talked to each person. And I ended up giving at the back of the book 200 $100 bills for them to start their journey. Mine, it has been just wonderful throughout the years. And I wanted the same thing for each and every team member that works for United Scrap Metal.
Did so they had to read the book first to find the $200 at the end? Is that how it worked?
Yes, that's how it worked. and they did.
Yeah,
They were so surprised that they came. I got flowers and hugs and people that came up to me and said, no one in any company has ever come and talk to them that was an executive or talk to them about their company. And their children read the book, and I was hoping that this could be inspirational for their kids.
Yeah, and if nothing else, the amount of loyalty it probably built among you and them is probably, you can't spend that kind of money to buy something like that.
That's great collateral.
Yeah. That's good collateral. I like that.
I hope so. I hope so. Nobody knows, you know, but certainly we still have the same group.
From 1978 to 2019, talk to us about how hard it's been to be a woman doing this. And have men underestimated you through the years?
Oh, my goodness. I think that was probably the only reason I was able to build the business, because they didn't feel, most of the men, this business had 400 people, 400 companies in the Chicago area, and at that time, and they all felt that it was certainly a man's business, and so they just ignored me, and they would go by my first piece of property that I purchased, and they would say, oh, don't worry about her. She's going to be gone in 6 months or a year or whatever. She won't be around. Well, guess what? It is 40 years later, and they're gone, and I'm here. So it just tells you, you know, they didn't pay attention when I would have bigger business. I would start to have more trucks. I kept buying property that was behind the original plant, and I didn't make it look nice. I didn't glamorize mm-hmm. the outside, so it looked like Sanford and Son. And so everyone that went by didn't think twice. Well, in the meantime, I built the manufacturing company was behind it. I bought every piece of property that surrounded it, and we now have about 40 acres, 45 mm-hmm. acres that are on Cicero Avenue and near 16th Street. And nobody ever knew that I was buying it all, but it was all behind. So this underestimating was, first of all, she's a woman. What does she know and how? And I have no family in this business, by the way. I didn't know anyone in this business. It's a long story how I just picked it up, but I had no knowledge. So it just goes to show you that if you don't give up and you really keep on going, that you can build.
Yeah, and is that the message when you go to speak to groups, and I know you do a lot of that, especially young women, is that the message you give them? What else do you tell them about succeeding?
Well, that you have to fail. Failing fast is sort of I've been saying that for 40 years, and that you have to get over yourself, and you don't have an ego in our business, or any business. Don't have an ego in it. Just keep going, and failure is where you learn, and if you don't fail, then you're probably not where you're going to be.
Have you thought about what might be next for United Scrap?
That's a good question, Steve. What will be next is we're expanding, and we'll probably look for other opportunities that are within, the United States, and we are always open to expanding our business. We've had, the resources that we have are really, really terrific. And we've trained people in our Chicago office, and then we send them out, and they're remarkable. All of them are doing very well.
Following up on the $200 seed money to the employees, have you gotten any stories yet from your employees about how they've perhaps seeded themselves?
Well, I did. I got a few that said they went and bought instruments. They wanted to learn to maybe a band. Mm-hmm. And one of them took an adult education class. One of them said, "This is for my children. I'll give it to them to go to school." So I get a lot of stories about what they're doing, but they love the idea that they can do anything. And that's my message, is that there isn't. My father was very inspirational to me because he said, you can do anything. And there's a lot of women that grow up without that father, somebody saying that you can do anything. And he did. He said, you can do anything. I really believed him.
Yeah. When you see, and congratulations on this, by the way, the Crane's notable women over 50, the whole group of women, stories are just unbelievable of all these women. How does it feel to be among that group? Does that kind of publicity mean a lot to you?
Yes. I think for certainly going forward, for any young women that look at that and know that it doesn't really take 40 years to get there. And I'm always honored to be amongst just some wonderful friends. And I know a lot of the women that were in that article. And whenever I have any publicity, I love the fact that women will come to me and say, I heard what you said, and that meant so much to me because this is where I am in my career. And so I always want somebody to think that everything is possible.
Marcia, it's wonderful meeting you. All the best to you and everybody at United Scrap Metal.
Thank you.
Marcia Serlin is the founder and CEO of United Scrap, and it's based in Cicero. We're going to continue our conversation with Marcia after the bell this morning and post our full interview in the podcast of the opening bell a little bit later this morning at WGNradio.com. You can also head over to unitedscrap.com to learn more about United Scrap.
Now, WGN Radio's Daily Conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Monday edition of The Opening Bell. New York Times senior economic correspondent Neil Irwin has written about the rapidly changing business and economic environment. His new book is called How to Win in a Winner-Take-All World, the definitive guide to adapting and succeeding in high-performance careers. Neil is with us this morning on the telephone. Neil, first of all, thanks for being with us this morning. I want to begin with the premise for the book. Talk to us a little bit about why you have written it and what you found out.
Sure. So in my day job, I write about economics and usually big picture, how the world is changing, how the economy is changing, how the corporate landscape is changing. And what I've talked to people about at night are really two sides of the same coin. That there's really that the changes happening in the macro economy are the ones that are making careers so tough to navigate and so complicated to make sense of. So I wanted to make sense of that and figure out what are those lessons about how the economy is changing that can help you have a better career.
And to do that, you've done some really good research here. You went to companies, big companies and small companies, companies like Microsoft, and talked to people there about how they're succeeding, and small companies as well. Talk to us a little bit about what you found on both sides of that coin, the big and the small.
So what I really believe is happening is there are more and more firms of a very certain type that dominate the modern economy. And they tend to be big, though not always. They tend to be technologically sophisticated. They are global. They are really creating advanced products that, in no matter what field you name, are really more and more dominant. It's true in banking. It's true in retail. It's true in technology. It's even true in things like consumer products. For example, I went to Chicago where Suntory Beam is based, the spirits company. And what I want to understand is, what does it take to be the kind of worker who really thrives in those organizations, who really succeeds? And I think there is a model for that that anybody can emulate that, doesn't always come automatically. But if you work at it, you really can be the person who will be successful in those types of organizations that dominate the modern economy.
Would that be the glue person?
Yeah. So part of what happens when these companies are so big, so complex, it takes people with a lot of very different technical skills to create good products, to create innovative products. But the problem is, you have all these people who do different things. It makes it really hard to coordinate and make teams work well together. So if you're the person who, yes, you have to have good technical skills and whatever your specialty is, but if you can make a team work together, if you're a glue person who makes that team stick together well, you're immensely valuable. You're the kind of person who that company really can rely on and will have a long career. I use the metaphor, it's kind of like a relay race, right? So to be an effective sprinter, you just have to run fast. To be effective on a relay team, yeah, you have to run fast, but you also have to get that handoff right. In modern organizations, if you're somebody who runs fast and can do that handoff effectively, you're especially valuable.
And so if you're not already that person, and the book goes into some detail here, but give us a sense of what we can be doing to make ourselves better fit into that role to become the glue person.
So I think the most important idea is around adaptability. And, I think we tend to, when you're growing up, if you're good at one sport, you keep playing that sport. It's nice to be good at things, right? We all lean into the thing that we are naturally talented at or naturally, comes naturally to us. But what I found over and over is that the people who really are able to become these glue people, who are able to really thrive and have long careers in these types of organizations, are people who cultivate from an early age a sense of adaptability and push themselves to do things that are outside their comfort zone. I think this is especially true in the early phases of a career, in college, grad school, anything like that. That's where the stakes are the lowest. You can try things that don't come naturally, and by trying that and doing that over and over again, you become better at becoming that glue person who's so valuable.
I know that some of us, when we hear the term big data, we often think, well, that's going to be something negative against me. But in this case, big data can actually help us become better employees. What did you find in your research?
Yeah, there's a tendency to think of all the work that companies are doing to try and understand what makes a worker effective. We all have different dashboards of what results are being achieved. That's kind of used for employee evaluations and things in a negative sense. I think the real idea is to take advantage of those tools to make yourself better. So I love the metaphor of baseball. So if you're, you know, if you go back to Moneyball, that the book and movie from the last decade, there's this entire analytics revolution going on in baseball that is all oriented around teams becoming better, making better hiring decisions, who they're going to sign, who they're going to start, things like that. But what's happened more and more is the best players are making good use of that data as well. They're understanding, where is there a hole in my, where I'm swinging the ball, where I'm missing more balls than I should? Where am I swinging at pitches that actually I shouldn't have swung at? What's my launch angle? How efficient are my routes when I'm trying to field? And the idea of the player taking advantage and taking control of that data, making good use of it, has a real metaphor in the corporate world. I have a case study in the book on Microsoft where they had a team that wasn't functioning well. People were unhappy with their work-life balance. They were afraid they were going to lose some talented people. They figured out through analyzing email and calendar data, the problem was they spent too much time in big meetings, and they had to restructure how people spent time to make sure that people were happy with their jobs. That's an example of how you can use these tools to make yourself more effective.
We've all been taught, at least most of us, I think, have been taught that if you show up at work every day, you're loyal to a company and you work hard, you're going to have a good career. That's not necessarily the case anymore, is it?
It's not. And I think, I think we've been living through this for 30 years or more. This idea of, having a career, it's like a marriage. You sign on with a company, you stay there for decades, you stay there indefinitely. It's not true anymore. Career is now a series of hookups. Now, those can last long or short periods of time. This is not necessarily saying that you have to quit your company every 2 or 3 years and move somewhere else. But I think what it depends on is this idea of reciprocity. Is the company really supporting you, enabling you to broaden your experiences, develop as a person, grow as a person, become the type of person who's more valuable to more types of organizations? Or are they just trying to shunt you into one role and let you just keep doing that job forever? If you're at the first type of company, that's great. You can stay there for a long time and really have a lot of opportunity. If you're that second type of company, maybe it is time to look around and look for a place where you can stretch yourself in new directions.
Yeah, and in this job market, too, where we have such a tight job market, employers are doing all kinds of things to attract employees. The flip side of that is we as potential employees have to do a better job of recruiting our companies, don't we?
Yeah, I think it really is a two-way street. And, I think a really important idea is that when you take a job, it's not just about the compensation and the benefits you receive. It's not just about the health plan and, this much salary. It's also about what learning and growth opportunities is that organization giving you. And there's a big difference between a job where you're able to really push yourself into new skills, as I talk about adaptability. Is it an organization that encourages you to be adaptable, that like enables you to stretch yourself into new fields that you might not have on your resume? Or again, do they just want to kind of put you in a silo and let you stay there indefinitely?
Yeah. One of the things I think a lot of people grapple with is they have life and career goals. Putting those two together in the same track is often very difficult. Do you have any advice for people on how to do that?
Yeah, so I did a little math, and if you start working when you're 22 years old and you retire when you're 65 years old, and if you sleep 8 hours a night, you have about 250,000 hours of waking hours in that kind of prime years of most people's careers. That's the biggest constraint on everything. And I titled this book not how to make the most money, not how to become a CEO, but how to win. And I think everyone's definition of winning in a modern economy is different. And I think I'm not prescriptive. I'm not going to tell you that, you need to spend this many hours at work, you need to spend this many hours on your hobbies or with your family. But I do think we all need to be thoughtful and deliberate about making those trade-offs, because making those trade-offs within that 250,000 hour constraint is the most binding constraint of them all. And I think, being deliberate and making sure at the end of the day you are allocating those hours according to what your own priorities for your life really are, that's a really important idea to me.
And two, the idea is very positive. The outcome of the book, too, is one where people really can have a career that, however they describe winning, however they think of winning is winning, whether it's being having a rewarding career or having a lot of money, all of that is possible.
It is, and you know, look, I use the metaphor a little bit of a sailboat. If you go out on a nice sunny day in a sailboat and you don't really know what you're doing, you don't know how the winds and the currents work, you're just kind of going out and drifting around and trying to have some fun, it's probably going to be fine. You're probably going to get back perfectly okay. If you go out on a stormy sea, you know, you really need to understand the winds and the currents and these things that you can't control but really will determine whether you're able to get back safely. And we're in a tumultuous time. We're in a time of rapid change in how companies work, how, you know, the nature of what a job is. So you really need to understand those winds and those currents. So I wrote this book to try and help people do that, to understand this economic landscape that you can't control, but you can adapt accordingly.
Yeah, and some of those winds blowing right now, and it's why this book is very timely, is this discussion of big tech companies that the government may be going in and thinking about breaking some of them up. That could change the landscape in a big way, couldn't it?
It could, and I write about these superstar companies, the winners in the winner-take-all economy. You know, there are real problems with that, and you know, there's a lot of evidence, for example, that big tech platforms, as you say, have power over our discourse and the political system that's problematic. There's evidence that, you know, corporate concentration may be something that depresses wages and is the reason, you know, workers haven't been getting big raises over the last couple of decades. And I think those problems are very real, and it's very legitimate for the political debate to circulate around what should be done about those questions. But I really do believe that this way of working I'm describing and what it takes to have a successful career in these types of organizations is going to remain true no matter what happens in Washington, no matter what happens in terms of breaking up tech companies or stricter antitrust enforcement or whatever it might be. You know, I think what I'm describing is a fundamental way of working that's endemic to these big organizations that are dominating the modern economy in the same way that industrialization 100 years ago, just because they, you know, brought in the rough edges of industrial capitalism doesn't mean it went away.
Neil, I know this, again, the book is going to be great for people to read, but as you finish it, is it left you with other questions that you'd like to answer perhaps in the next book you write?
I think all this stuff is changing so fast. I think this is a really useful book for helping people navigate their career in the next few years. You know, as I get older, I'm 40. I'll be curious to see if I want to kind of update for how this stuff can apply as you reach more advanced stages of your career. I think being able to reinvent yourself, it's hard enough when you're in your 20s and 30s to reinvent yourself. I think as people get in their 40s, 50s, and 60s, seeing how those changes and how those impulses change will be fascinating. So have to save that for another day.
All right. Well, we appreciate you being on with us this morning.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
Neil Irwin is a New York Times senior economic correspondent and the author of How to Win in a Winner-Take-All World, the definitive guide to adapting and succeeding in high-performance careers.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward a week open on Wall Street a little bit later this morning. Dow futures are off nearly 76 points with an implied open well below 100 now, down nearly a quarter of a percent. S&P and NASDAQ futures are lower as well. Let's get the latest on agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Well, hopefully there'll be some strength in the grain market at the Chicago Board of Trade after the sell-off in soybeans on Friday, down 13 cents, corn up 2.5, and wheat down a penny. Some fairly good soybean sales on Friday, 600,000 tons earmarked for China, and Farm Bureau will hold meetings, 5 of them. First one coming up on July 12th this week, hosted by the Fulton County Farm Bureau. It will be at the Dixon Mound State Museum. It will explain the challenges farmers and shippers will face with the Illinois River shutdown next year. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Monday, July the 8th. Consumer credit for May comes out today. Analysts are forecasting an increase of $15.9 billion after a $17.5 billion gain in April. Again, consumer credit likely at midday. Also on the calendar today, we're looking for a couple of auctions, the three-month bill, the six-month bill. Then through the rest of the week, some potentially big developments tomorrow as the Fed Chairman Jerome Powell speaks early in the day. A couple of other Fed speakers out as well. We'll also get the Small Business Optimism Index, the job openings and labor turnover survey, mortgage applications on Wednesday, And then on Thursday, the Consumer Price Index out as well. And then the PPI coming on Friday. So lots of things on the calendar this week, especially today, that could move the markets.